Live from the Ken and Valerie Baker Studio at WHYY, this is Studio 2.
On Thursday, April 9th, welcome, friends, on Into the Program. I'm Cherry Gregg.
Yes, friends. I'm Avi Wolfman Aaron.
And Avi, I got a story to tell you. Recently, I was at an event and I met this beautiful woman. Okay. She was sitting next to me and she was funny. She had me cracking up. And you know that I cannot fake laugh.
No, you're terrible at that.
I cannot fake laugh. She was professional, smart. We knew a lot of the same people. Her name had a hard CH like my name. This was like fake. We exchanged numbers and I was like, girl, I'm going to call you. Womp, womp, womp.
Oh, no. Sad ending.
I never called her.
And she never called you?
And she never called me. And prepping for this show, I was like, I just immediately felt like we could be friends. And now it's been months. And I'm like,
is this your attempt to reconnect
yes,
with her right now?
I'm like, I felt like I should reach out to her. But then I'm like, am I going to come across like a creepy person? And so
at this point, yes, unfortunately.
Yes, because it's been too long.
And well, so you're doing it on air. Yeah,
we're doing the show today about making friends as an adult. Gone are the days of school hallways and built in social circles. Now it's calendars. It's commitments. And wondering if you're like me, like if the other person is going to think you're some kind of weirdo, right? If you reach out after months. And so today we're asking, why is friendship so hard right now, especially and as an adult? And what can we actually do about it? We're going to talk about a thing called aggressive friendship, defining people in your busy world. And of course, we want to hear from you. How do you make new friends? How do you keep old ones? How do you break the ice? Like, after months, if you really like somebody and you wouldn't mind being friends, give us a call, 888-477-9499. The email is studio2@whyy.org. And for our streamers on YouTube or Facebook, drop a comment in the chat. And it sounded like dating, you know, and everything. But I did like her. I was like, we could be friends.
I'm trying to think what her name would be. Chelsea? Charlie?
I don't want to put her name out there, but those are not it.
Okay. 0 for 2.
Yeah.
Anyways, yeah. Also, by the way, it's DJ of the day. We're going to end the show on a song picked by one of you on the topic of the show, which is friendship. There's so many like easy ones. I'd love to be surprised
There's
by
so
the pick
many.
Today, but it's up to you and it's up to executive producer Kevin. So send him your nominations for friendship songs. Studio2@WHYY.org. Got to get them in before 12:30 if you want to be our DJ of the day.
Yeah.
Before we do all of that, we have to start with a trio of local news stories. And we have to start with this tragedy in the Grace Ferry section of Philadelphia. Yesterday afternoon, a little after 2 o'clock, a parking garage under construction partially collapsed. One worker is confirmed dead. Two others still missing at this hour. Those two missing people are believed to be trapped under the rubble, according to our news partner 6ABC, but the search and rescue operation has been complicated by the fact that the structure remains unstable. Presumably, there is much more investigation to come about the cause of this, but Mayor Sherelle Parker said yesterday this collapse started when a roof segment fell and triggered a cascading collapse. The mayor also said permits and inspections on the site were properly issued and up to date. This garage was already under scrutiny before the tragedy. It's owned by the Children's Hospital of Philadelphia, which is a short drive away on the other side of the Schuylkill River. And when they proposed this garage, there was significant community pushback, some worried about the traffic, others objecting to the fact that it's a large garage for CHOP employees, which would encourage more car transit. So this garage had actually already been somewhat under scrutiny, and now a tragedy layered on top of it.
Yeah, so many questions about how this could have happened. The mayor said that the garage was being assembled with precast concrete, and I guess they were stacking it, and then one piece failed and then collapsed straight down. And according to reporting, people who lived nearby said their home shook when it happened. Others said they heard a rumble and did not know what was going on. You know, and I feel really bad for the families of the folks who have not yet been found, as well as for the person whose family member passed away. So a lot of investigation on exactly what happened. I hate to hear about a tragedy like this.
Absolutely. Moving on to our second story now, Cherry.
Yes. The Trump administration revealed this week its proposal for what could appear at the president's house at 6th and Market Streets in Philadelphia. The Trump administration released digital renderings, posted them on the National Park Service website. It provides a timeline of U.S. history that includes slavery, abolition, and the Underground Railroad, as well as the Civil War. If you recall, the Trump administration dismantled the President's House exhibit earlier this year, sparking a legal battle with the city of Philadelphia. The original exhibit was titled, it was talking about slavery and the making of a new nation. It was built in response to advocacy led by African-American leaders, and it centered the nine people enslaved by George Washington in Philadelphia during his time as president. The new version put forth by the Trump administration would reframe that story. And I'll give you a couple of examples of how they changed things. The panels include the names and a brief description of the nine people enslaved by Washington, but it adds a panel titled Presidents Washington and Adams on Slavery. And it posits that George Washington had private doubts about slavery, and it conflicted with his public responsibility as president. It also kind of says it says that the enslaved people in the president's house experienced more autonomy than elsewhere in the South and were able to explore and even go to the theater. And a lot of people say that this reframing is a whitewashing or a sanitizing of the brutality of slavery, especially if you recall what the former exhibits were. They were very clear about the position on slavery in this. And so this legal battle sort of continues right now. The case is currently pending in the Third Circuit, but it's unclear if this is just a proposal, if it could become, you know, the new part of the president's exhibit, or what the next steps would be.
Yeah, the contrast between the two is obvious. I didn't really know what to expect, because when they took down the initial panels, I thought, well, maybe they're just not going to mention slavery at all in the new panels. That's not the route that the administration is taking.
No, they put it in there.
They put it in there. It sort of takes it from it, when I read the whole thing, and what you are kind of come away with is that Washington was a hypocrite. That's sort of like the theme, it seems like, of the panel, that he was privately against this, but sort of publicly approved policies
and got wealthy because of it. Yeah.
Right. And that further codified institutionalized slavery. So I guess that wasn't exactly what I was expecting, but I understand why people would have great objections to it. So like you said, we don't know if these are going to go up at any point, because this is all still being worked out in the courts.
Yeah. And by the way, shout out to the Philadelphia Inquirer for their reporting on that story.
Absolutely. Story number three, before we transition to our main segment for today, Philadelphia native and Overbrook / Temple grad Coleman Domingo.
Oh, yeah.
Is set to host Saturday Night Live this weekend for the first time. Congratulations.
Coleman
Domingo, 56 years old. His career has really just taken off in the last 5-6 years or so. He's going to be in this upcoming Michael Jackson biopic.
Yeah. Nominated for Oscars a couple of years in a row.
Absolutely. He's going to be in an upcoming Steven Spielberg film. So, yeah, Coleman Domingo, household name, A-lister. So very, very cool. I went back. I was curious.
Yeah.
And I wanted to see how many people who grew up in Philly or the Philly suburbs have ever hosted Saturday Night Live. This is my unofficial count. I believe there have been, before Coleman Domingo, 17 people.
Okay.
How many do you think you can name?
I think I can name 10.
10? Whoa, really?
Yeah, I don't know if they're right, though.
Okay. Okay, give me your 10.
Low-hanging fruit, Tina Fey.
Ding, 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 ding.
Quinta Brunson.
Ding, 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 ding.
Kevin Hart.
That is correct.
Taylor Swift.
I'm not counting her as being part of the... She's from Berks County.
All right.
She doesn't qualify.
Bob Saget.
That's correct. Well done.
Will Smith.
No
Will Smith.
That's a shocker. That was the shocker. Will Smith has never hosted Saturday Night Live.
Okay, and I know people mad at him, and I am too. Bill Cosby?
No.
Okay.
No, I'm getting shaky.
Okay. Bradley Cooper?
Ding 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 ding.
Okay. I don't know if you're counting this person, but I was going to say Bruce Springsteen.
I would not count him as being part of the, like. He's not in the census-defined Philadelphia region. I would not count him. I don't know if he's hosted.
Okay. Last person, Kevin Bacon.
Ding, 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 ding. Okay, so let's count up your tally. Okay. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. That's pretty good. You got 6.
I got 6.
All right, you want to hear the rest of them real quick?
Yes, go ahead.
1987, Valerie Bertinelli from Wilmington, Delaware.
Okay.
Peter Boyle, who was a character actor, but later became played the father on Everybody Loves Raymond.
Okay. I like that show.
He's from
Norristown. I didn't know he was from Philly.
Yeah, he is. Sabrina Carpenter.
That was one I should have said. That was one I should have said.
Old actor Broderick Crawford.
Don't know him.
Blythe Danner, which I feel like never gets credit for being from Philly, but she
Blythe.
Is from Philly.
Okay.
Ryan Phillippe from Wilmington, Delaware.
I did not know he was
Aubrey Plaza from Wilmington, Delaware.
We talked about Aubrey.
Kelly Ripa from South Jersey.
I forgot she was from South Jersey.
Miles Teller from South Jersey.
Yeah.
Ish, Doylestown as well. Bruce Willis from South Jersey. And then maybe you could count Sylvester Stallone because he did go to high school here.
All right.
There
I
you
needed
go.
A friend. I needed a friend to call.
Supporting WHYY, Penn Medicine is helping to find new cures for cancer. With life-saving clinical trials and advanced surgical techniques, Penn Medicine is offering more hope for patients everywhere. Learn more at pennmedicine.org/cancer.
Welcome back, friends, to Studio 2 on WHYY, where the topic is now Taylor Swift, Philadelphian or not. No, I'm just kidding. I'm Avi Wolfman-Aaron.
And friends, I'm Cherry Gregg. Making friends can be really uncomfortable. You have to push yourself out of your comfort zone and make a lot of small talk. And even once you develop friendships, they might not always fill your cup.
A 2024 survey by the American Friendship Project suggests the source of loneliness had more to do with quality than quantity of friendships. While 58% of Americans surveyed said they had five or more friends, 40% said they were not fully satisfied by these relationships. So how do we develop deeper and richer connections, and how do we maintain them?
And here to help us talk about this and think through it and give us some tips, too, we have Natalie Pennington, Assistant Professor of Communication Studies at Colorado State University and a co-leader for the American Friendship Project. Natalie, welcome to Studio 2.
Hi, thanks so much for having me.
Great to have you. We also have Anna Goldfarb, author of Modern Friendship, How to Nurture Our Most Valued Connections, as well as the Substack Friendship Explained. Welcome back to Studio 2,
I'm so excited. Anna. Thanks for having me.
Yes.
And thank you for listening out there. We'd love to hear from you this hour. How do you make new friends? Give us some advice. How do you keep old ones? The phone number is 888-477-9499. The email is studio2@whyy.org. On YouTube, Facebook, drop a comment in the chat.
And I wanted to sort of start with you, Anna, and just ask, you know, has making friends as an adult always been hard? Or given technology and where we are with, you know, social atrophy post-pandemic, is it harder?
Oh, it's the hardest it's ever been.
The hardest it's ever been?
Without a doubt.
Oh, lay
but
it
we're
out.
We're so connected.
Oh, my God.
This is the trade-off of the kinds of lives we lead. We lead very hyper-fluid lives. We move around more. Mm-hmm. We have different jobs more than previous generations. Mm. You know, there's more opportunities we have to meet more people. And we also, our identities have shifted, like, in huge ways in the past few decades. You know, it's not as simple as just even a few hundred, like 100 years ago of, you know, I'm a woman, I'm a married woman, I'm a parent. Now it's like, well, am I separated? Am I divorced? Am I like widowed? Like there's so many different identities you can have. People sometimes don't even have one religion they are anymore.
Yeah.
So it's a harder question to answer. Who am I?
Yeah.
And we cultivate friendships because they mirror parts of us, but we're more dynamic. We have more interests than ever. I mean, look at how many things you could be into music, not just music, how many bands, you know, and that you find people to reflect those parts of you. But we change all the time.
Wow. And Natalie, your thoughts, do you agree with Anna? Is it harder than it's ever been to make and keep these connections as an adult?
I would absolutely agree. And great to see you, Anna.
Y'all friends?
Yes, I met it, yes.
Love it. That's the work we do.
I was so happy to hear. I was like, oh, wonderful. I would say especially moving. So there's actually U.S. Census data that says Americans are moving at greater distances than they used to. And so we're ending up in new spaces, right, on the hustle and grind for jobs and end up somewhere where we have to make all new friends as an adult. And it's hard.
Yeah. And so what are we losing then? Like, what's the societal impact, Natalie, of this struggle to make friends?
It really starts with the individual level, so that struggle to make friends can affect your feelings of loneliness, your feelings of connection, disconnection, and that starts to then affect your mental health, which can affect, as you know, we know, physical health as well, and can make us unhappy in our jobs, right? I really say, like, friendship is at the core of all these things we're doing and society at large.
Yeah, and there are, like, health impacts that come with this feeling of isolation or this reality of isolation, Natalie?
Yeah, Julianne Holt Lundstedt at BYU actually did a really great study that argued that smoking cigarettes is as bad as the lack of friendship and social connection. And so really keeping in mind this, it affects our heart health, our physical well-being to not have friendship.
Mm. Wow. We'd love to hear from you this hour. How do you make new friends? How do you keep the old ones? 888-477-9499. The email is studio2@whyy.org. And our streamers on Facebook or YouTube, keep those comments coming in the chat. I want to bring in a caller. We have Marisol from Kennett Square on the line. Marisol, you're on Studio 2. What's your question or comment?
Hi, Abby. Hi, Chair. I love your show. I just wanted to mention that.
Yes,
love your topics. I heard your topic today, and I couldn't help but call in because I have always struggled with either having good friends, good quality friends in my life, and not that I didn't love them and we didn't have things in common. It just, at some point, I grew apart from them or they grew apart from me, and we just ended up having different interests and likes, or some of them just wouldn't grow. They kind of stayed in the same place. I'm 55 years old, and some of them, for instance, still want to go partying and clubbing and drinking and things like that.
That's too much.
I'm a grandma, you know? Yeah. I'm like a grandma. I'm married. You know what I mean? I'm like, I've grown all those things. And one other thing was, I think in my life, I've always been a caregiver of, you know, someone who's always there. Right now, we're taking care of two parents, for instance. You know what I mean? Like, but there's always been people I've taken in, and I've tried to help. And as I got older, it just became so much for me to have to also take care of people like my friends, because I'm thinking, like, why should I need friends for, like, many reasons, you know, to get away from everyday life and work and stresses. The last thing I need is friends who I also have to take care of.
Oh, thank you.
Thank you, Marisol.
Yeah,
from
wait a second. Was Marisol the same person who had that epic call a few months back about the failures of the Democratic Party? Can I get a thumbs up from that on the producers?
I
like Marisol. I don't know. She seemed familiar to me.
Marisol has the good stuff. But, you know, I wanted to sort of, I like what Marisol, you know, talked about, like growing out of friends, friend shifting. Mm-hmm. And I wanted to sort of ask, what do you view as a friend? Because, you know, is it somebody like Marisol said, who's, you know, you already caring for your mama, you get caring for your kids, all this stuff. How do people view friendships as they change? Because a friend, maybe, you know, when you're young, is just somebody to hang with. When you get older, maybe your expectations for what that relationship looks like changes.
You know, this really highlights the problem with modern friendship is that language is inadequate.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, we have different kinds of friends and we have different intensity of friendships.
Mm-hmm.
So we have two kinds of friendships, agentic and communal.
Agentic and communal. Oh, you're going deep now.
Agentic is task-based. Like, we're in a book club together. We're in a running club together.
Got
we
it.
Get together for a reason.
Mm-hmm.
Communal is about emotional support. Already knowing that, you can kind of filter out which friendships are we talking about here. There's also active and nostalgic friendships. So there's ones you see all the time because you're interested in running. And you have ones you see all the time because you give emotional support to one another. Then there's the nostalgic ones that are further flung, or maybe they're in a different phase of life. You don't see them as much.
But those people are still your friends. But it's giving you something different, I think, is what you're...
Well, yeah. I mean, they don't know as much about you day to day.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know, you don't know much about them day to day. You might text them, hey, girl, thinking of you. But you don't know that where they are in their life even to receive that message. So it might take a week to hear back from them. It doesn't mean they don't value you.
Yeah.
It just means that you're not in their innermost tier of people they talk to all the time, maybe.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of different, like, things going on with Marisol's question. It's making me think language would really help here. Mm-hmm. Better language of these sounds like emotional, like communal emotional support relationships. You know, a lot of people aren't very well versed on how to give emotional support. Sometimes they give unsolicited advice. Maybe they vent without asking for consent first. They just do all these things that push their friends away if your friendship is about emotional support. So if, you know, with friends, we tend to hang on till the costs outweigh the benefits. Mm. So if your friendship is a communal one and they're not giving good emotional support, then the costs outweigh the benefits, you're going to detach.
Right, right. Can I ask a question about nostalgic friendships in the modern age?
Mm-hmm.
Because we've been talking about how, like, we move around a lot and it's harder and harder to, like, make new friends because we're always starting over and we're all disconnected. But it occurred to me that maybe it's easier to hold on to our nostalgic friendships because we've got, like, our group chats and, like, we, across mm-hmm. distance, we can still, like, maintain some contact that doesn't require, like, sitting down, writing a letter or picking up the phone and calling. Like, we can just do, like, light touch.
Yeah,
maintenance of nostalgic friendships.
Men seem to really like that a lot.
Group chats.
Men love a group chat. Men like something where they don't have to divulge too much or be too vulnerable. So
totally.
A group chat about,
I'm trading memes all day, every day.
Yes,
yeah.
That is your, like, the speed for most men. Women.
But is that a bad thing?
No, it's not a bad thing. Yeah. It's just what it is. You know, women are more like restaurants, okay, where we want to sit down. How's your water? Do you need more water? A lot of service, a lot of disclosure. Men's friendships ideally are a beer hall, where they're in a group. There's not too much pressure on them. They can come and go as they please. That's their ideal.
Yeah.
But men's friendships right now are mostly a cafeteria, where it's like not the beer hall vibe. It's like, oh, do you want to get a beer? It's like, oh, just one-on-one and just we talk. Like, I don't know. It's not compelling to me. So most would rather just be with their wife's restaurant.
Yeah. By the way, MJ says a man, MJ, who is a man, says it's much easier to make friends with women than it is with men. I'm not qualified to say why, but I've noticed it ever since learning that there is a definite correlation between social activity and longevity. I've stepped up my game. And so, Natalie, want to bring you into the conversation. I mean, are there gender differences amongst, and Anna sort of touches on this, between how men make and maintain friendships and how deep they go versus how women tend to do that? Because I do have my little girlfriend groups of it, and we hang from time to time. So you're just, you know, can you outline some of the gender differences in making and maintaining friendships there?
Yeah, and it's some of what Anna's already mentioned. So it can really be about what we expect or want out of that friendship. I think there's a higher expectation often we see for women for support, for that self-disclosure, connection, like we want to be together and then really talk. Whereas we'll see with men's friendships, sometimes it's just being in the same space together can be kind of sufficient as a starting point, or they don't know how to have those disclosures happen and go kind of deeper in their interactions. But
what are, like, the pros and cons of those two modes, though? Because, like, I do feel like sometimes for guys, because you could do this kind of friendship maintenance with very little effort, you know, you can still kind of keep a little flame going with a lot of friends, but obviously you're losing out on, like, the more the what you get, the positives you get from the deeper conversation. So I guess pros and cons, Natalie, of those two different modes of friendship.
And I like that you mentioned that, Avi. I think that's exactly, it's actually both are really good for us. It's just that if we have all one or all the other, then we're kind of missing out. And so that's where I really love, you know, we were just hearing Marisol talking. Sometimes we got to let the friends go that aren't working for us, but it's then bringing some new people into the fold or having that balance between the deeper support, more communal, and then those agentic based ones.
Mm. Yeah. And I just think about what MJ said. I mean, you know, you think about if you're a man and you have real issues going on, right? And you want to disclose it, and you might have to disclose it to one of your female friends, right? Because one of your guy friends, y'all might not have nursed the friendship to a point where emotional support is part of that relationship. Just sort of, how do you sort of, if you're someone who wants to take, you know, the more transactional friend, or we have an activity friend, but shift it over, how do you even do that? Or is that even possible?
Well, I mean, you can try, but, you know, friendships happen for a reason.
Yeah.
You know, one of the first things I learned when I was reporting on friendship is the role of desire. Mm. And every friendship exists for a clear and compelling reason. Mm. That's why they stay active. So it's, what is the reason we're in this friendship, and how compelling is it to me, and how compelling is it to the other person? So all that to say, with men, they're not in the friendship for emotional support. Mm-hmm. They're not conditioned to give it to one another. If anything, they've been penalized it probably their whole lives. So it's not surprising that, you know, they don't seek out other men for emotional support. It's just not part of why they're in the friendship. Women are conditioned to do this much better. So yeah, men aren't going to go to other men for emotional support. It's very uncomfortable for them. Mm. But also with the constraints of heterosexuality, other women might be a threat to your relationship.
Right.
Which is why men are sort of boxed in. Because if other men aren't available for emotional support, the only sanctioned one is your spouse or your significant other.
This is
other.
Literally what one of our commenters on YouTube, DTMH25, says. A lot of men depend on the women in their lives to maintain a social life.
Yes. And it's not their fault. I think that's true. Yeah. And it's not their fault. I think there's a narrative that men are these like inept, friendless, you know, losers. And I really want to impress. It's not their fault. It's the culture. Because we have strong homophobia. Like, there's actually studies that men would forego a more desirable preference, or they would pay money to avoid being in a situation that would even have a whiff of a romantic overture.
Wow.
Like, men are do not do shared activities with other men because of internalized homophobia. It's really sad, even though they want to.
And I remember when bromances were like a thing for a while.
Yes, but bromances, there's an unwritten rule with bromances that if a woman, you have a date with a woman, you can go to that. You can dump us.
Right.
You can go with, if you have a woman in the life, like, go with her.
Interesting.
Right, the priorities.
The priorities, yeah.
Let me read this comment from Alicia, who's responding to Cherry's setup of the show. Cherry says, call or text that woman. That's what Alicia
says.
Oh,
I can help with this. I can help
you, Cherry. If she's creeped out or she won't respond, but I bet she will love to hear from you. And I think, Alicia adds, I think a good way to make friends in the city is to join your local park's friends group. Shout out Gold Star Park. Or at least go to the twice yearly park cleanups and be open to making friends of people from all ages. I love having friends that are my age, older, and younger. Can I just say real quick, that is my local park. And Alicia, I really hope to meet you. And I tried to go to the meeting they just had,
but then
my kid threw like a fit and I couldn't go. Oh. And I just feel like that gets to this issue of like timing. And it's so hard sometimes to like get the treadmill moving on joining a new group because your schedule's already so full. And I still want to be friends with Alicia. But, you know, that's kind of, it made me think about that. Just like, it's so hard to fit it in.
Yeah, you're in a tough season. Like, it's really hard to prioritize friendships when you have a kid, you know, throwing a tantrum.
Yeah.
So that's fine.
It wasn't a full-blown tantrum. She was just like, I don't want to go. And she was really, like, adamant about it, even though it would have been fun.
Yeah.
Yes. But I can help you, Cherry.
Yeah, go ahead.
I can help you with this friend. The reason why you didn't reach out to her is because you didn't have a reason to. It was too vague. So,
because what would I say?
Yes.
Hey, I met you like 3 months ago or last year. It was last year.
Yes. And when you're hitting it off with someone, you sort of have to plan like, well, what are we going to do together? Where are we going to practice our friendship? What do you want to do? You want to go see movies? Are you interested in Thai food? Like, what can we do together? Mm-hmm. So then when you reach out, it's like, hey, like we talked about museums. Would you want to go see this exhibit?
Right.
So you need.
I need a thing.
You need a thing. Most women don't really do that because just getting together to talk is the thing, and that's what they do with their friends, emotional support. But you're not there yet because you're not friends yet.
Yeah, so I got to open the door, and I didn't want to be a creep, though. Yeah,
you're not a creep.
You can
say, "Hey,
I'm not a creep." Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, friend.
This is a creep-free invitation. You're just like, "Hey, I loved meeting you. I've been thinking about you." Like anything.
That line. Yes, but it's true. But it's true at the same time.
And you can say anything can help you with. Like, is there anything you want to do that I can help?
I really liked her. I was like, you know, you know how you just meet people, and you're like, we could be having a lot. We could cut up.
Yes.
Like, and have a lot of fun
together. And
your
friend can say, well, I got to go to Target. Do you want to come to Target? And you're like, let's do a Target run.
Yeah.
So ask what she needs help with.
And then
find an opening of something she already cares about.
And Natalie, I wonder if there's a way to put systems in place that make, you know, keeping those friends and opening the door to friendships. Because I like the idea. I'm going to come up with a thing and open the door. But I wonder if there's systems like that you can put in place so that you can keep the door open with your friends. Natalie.
Yeah. I would say be okay with also reaching out, and it doesn't have to always be a thing. So just because you can't get together and you don't have time, there can be the chance to say, oh, I was flipping through TikTok and saw this video and it made me think of you. Hope you're doing good.
Oh,
I have a quick fun story to share.
Yeah, totally. I'm down for that. Okay, let's bring in another caller. This is Susan from Philadelphia on line two. Susan, you are on studio two. What's your question or comment?
Hi. Terry, I'll be your friend. I think you're super cool. I'm like in my upper 50s and just feel really fortunate that although I am divorced and not doing great on the finding a partner department, in the friends department, I'm really fortunate. And I have a lot of great close friends that I've had for a long time. And when you were talking about like the different types of friends, like these are friends that are communal, that we really give support to one another, emotional support. And I think part of the reason why we've been able to stay friends for so long over all these years and through divorces and even a divorce within, you know, a couple within the friend group, we get together regularly at certain times of the year. And it's just a given that we're going to see each other. We also get together a lot of other times, but like we have these traditions twice a year.
That's like a system. Yeah.
That's so important.
Yeah, a system for sure. And with newer friends, like recently during the last snowstorm or something, I was like not going out, feeling bored, whatever, went to see some music that I like and like made friends with everybody in the place and like now have a favorite new cover band, you know?
Nice. So who's the band, Susan?
Crickets and Cicadas. They're like a dead cover band.
Nice.
And, wrote it down.
Cicadas. Yeah, write it down. You know what? Part of the reason why I think it's so important is like it's not just the band and the music. It was the community. Like I walked in, people were super friendly. Everybody was so nice. And like deadheads are always like that. And I just really hadn't been around that community in a while. And it just reminded me, you know, like why this stuff is so important.
Totally.
And
thank you.
It's been so nice.
Thank you, Susan.
And you know what? You saw how good Susan felt getting in that group. I mean, because people forget, like, it just feels really good to have friends and to be a part of a community, Anna.
Yeah. Well, music is one of the pillars that people connect on, really connect on. And humor is another one. Location, where you're from, may not be a big deal, but if you're in Mongolia and you meet someone from Philly, you might be like, oh my God.
Thank God.
Like, thank God. So it's like there are pillars that people, you know, can work with.
Can we go through those again?
Geography,
it's humor.
It's from Robin Dunbar's book, Friends. Yeah. He's a British evolutionary great person, psychologist. Yeah. And he said humor, music, geography. Yeah. Proximity, like you're on the same block, like
Absolutely.
You live close to each other.
But those are four really great places.
Yeah,
to
like
start,
those are pretty much the main ones.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that's why we make friends in college and we're young because we have time to go to shows and concerts. And
totally. Well, speaking of, someone on YouTube said, Ellen Tracy said, my friends having kids really made us drift apart. I'd be interested to know how. Your friends that have/don't have kids made it harder to make friends as you get older. Maybe we can get to that on the other side of this.
Yeah, that's
break.
A good one.
And Ellie4390 on YouTube says, as a trans guy, I can confirm there are definitely differences in how men and women are taught to treat friendships. Interesting perspective there. And I want to add this one more before we get to break. Little historical perspective from Rosemary, who says, in Abraham Lincoln's day, the 1860s, the men were effusive about their love and friendships with other men, especially in their correspondences and private meetings. So maybe Rosemary positing that some of this is a more of a modern phenomenon. Mm-hmm. Who knows?
Interesting.
But
Interesting,
all good Rosemary. Things to chew on as we go to break. Lots of great comments this hour. We'd love to hear from you. How do you make new friends? How do you keep old ones? Our number is 888-477-9499 or email studio2@whyy.org. And we will be right back on Studio 2.
Support Supporting WHYY, Penn Medicine is helping to find new cures for cancer. With life-saving clinical trials and advanced surgical techniques, Penn Medicine is offering more hope for patients everywhere. Learn more at pennmedicine.org/cancer.
And welcome back to Studio 2 on WHYY. I'm Avi Wolfman-Aaron.
And I'm Cherry Gregg. Before we pick back up our conversation about modern friendships, we wanted to shout out a big event we're hosting at the end of April.
Studio 2 will broadcast a live debate between the three leading candidates for Pennsylvania's 3rd Congressional District on Wednesday, April 29th.
So our live show that day will be Avi and I asking questions of State Representative Chris Rabb, Dr. Eli Stanford, and State Senator Sharif Street. They are the three leading Democrats looking to win the May primary for the seat being vacated by Congressman Dwight Evans.
This district represents much of Center City and Northwest Philadelphia, and it's one of the most competitive primaries on the ballot in our region this year.
Yeah, again, that's Wednesday, April 29th at noon right here at WHYY headquarters on Independence Mall. It is free, but tickets are going fast, and you need to register at WHYY.org/events. I hope to see you there.
Absolutely. Now let's get back to our main topic for today, how to find your community and how to deepen your existing relationships. Our question for you, our listeners, is this. How do you make new friends? How do you keep old ones? Our number is 888-477-9499. Our email is studio2@whyy.org. And on YouTube or Facebook, you could drop a comment in the chat.
Yeah, now we're going to bring in Brian Adolph into the conversation. Brian is the founder of Join Philly, a database of local clubs like Philly Bike Train, Analog Lovers Club, or the Drunken Knitwits. Gotta love that one. That's a group of for knitters and crocheters. Brian, welcome to Studio 2.
Hi, thanks for having me.
So, Brian, how many clubs are in this database?
Great question. We have, looks like there's over 120 clubs so far. Wow. And this database just started maybe 10 months ago.
Wow.
I have about 10 clubs to go in, and there's every day I find more. So Philly has no shortage of super interesting, fascinating, cool clubs and groups to join.
Yeah. And so how does it work? Like, people search the database. So why would somebody find it, and how would they use it and sort of to make connections?
Sure. And well, the database, which is a directory of clubs, is one aspect of Join Philly, which is this civic initiative with the goal to help Philadelphians find real world connection through clubs and groups. And just real quick, because it comes up a lot, the difference between what an event and a club and what makes a club, and why is that important? It's because clubs, something like social clubs, but that could run the gamut. You mentioned a few. On a recurring basis. They meet regularly with the same people, which builds relationships over time and builds community. So that's why they're so important and crucial. And the other side of Join Philly is the Philadelphia Activities Fair that's actually coming up this Sunday as an in-person way to find and meet all these clubs. Yeah. So to get back to your question, why do we have this? Is because I noticed there's so many clubs in this city and groups and associations and also civic resources and city resources, but they're sometimes difficult to find, or they're not designed well, or they're like, I found some of them are kind of opaque for the people that need them. And then the other side is a whole bunch of people that are either new to the city. We get about 35,000 people every year to the city, or they're long timers that have been here, and they just more disconnected after COVID. There's a lot of threads on Reddit of, I'm looking for friends. How do I find friends?
Yeah.
And it's hard. It's, as you already mentioned, a few of the reasons why. So I noticed there's kind of two sides and this big gap in the middle, what I'm calling the participation gap, and realized, well, we need more on-ramp.
Yeah.
So that's what Join Philly is. It's the participation on-ramp to make it. We can't fix everything with friends, finding friends, but it's one little aspect of it to better connect people to these clubs and
Well,
groups.
Thank you for doing that work, by the way, and thank you for joining us today. That was Brian Adolph, founder of Join Philly. Mm-hmm. You can check them out. And I'll also mention here a comment from Judith, who says, as a widow who moved into what I think will be my last move, a condo in a wonderful walkable town, Collingswood, New Jersey, I didn't know anyone. I made new friends by starting groups. I invited neighbors to join me at the Walnut Street Theater, and I got four women who wanted to join me. That's a great story. Thank you for sharing it, Judy.
Yeah, I want to read another one. Janice says, one way to make new friends is by getting involved in something. I started playing tennis during the pandemic. I met a whole lot of friends from various backgrounds who I otherwise would never have gotten to know. So I want you to make the argument, Anna, to the non-joiners. Okay.
Yes.
Because there's a lot of folks out here. I'm married to one. Okay. And I sit next to one every day. All right. They're like, I don't join. I'm good. Like, but they still want to hang out. So,
but
like,
we're in denial.
Yeah. In denial. In denial. So make the pitch. And obviously one of these, these non-joiner people.
I mean, a joiner is, you know, a certain kind of friendship. It depends on what the reason is for the get together. It's okay to be not be a non-joiner. It's okay to be an introvert. It really starts with why would someone want to be your friend? Mm. What are you bringing to the table? You know, people make friendships for five reasons, according to studies. Career, to help with their career. Mating, to meet people to date.
Yeah.
Desirable qualities, which means that there's compatibility and you share hobbies and passions. Fourth is emotional support. Yeah. And fifth is what they call sociability, which means like you're in the mix and you're meeting other people. Mm-hmm. But that's also the same five reasons why friendships fade.
Right.
Is they you're not in the same career. You know, one's looking to date and one's, you know, divorced and not looking to date. Like whatever.
One of those threads phrase.
Yes.
Yeah.
So really when you look at it, well, what do I bring to someone's world? What is the currency?
Yeah.
And I would look for people in your career. If your career is really important to you, do networking. Find other people you can help with what they're working on. If it's emotional support, learn how to give it. Learn how to be a better emotional supporter so that you can offer it to people. Sociability, it's like, well, if that's important to me, how can I do that for other people?
So you got to learn how to be a friend too.
Yeah.
That is the piece that's often missing from these conversations is where are my friends? Not what? Why would someone want to be my friend? Yeah. What are my strengths? What can I? How
that's
can
that
I?
Introspection.
I
right
know,
there,
but that's the pitch. Yeah. Like,
but let me ask you real quick as a follow-up, because I don't know you like off mic, but you feel like you're just you've got a very effusive.
I'm a big bird.
Yeah.
I'm a big bird, not an Oscar the Grouch.
Exactly. So I think, of course, Anna's got friends, but there's a lot of people who aren't like you, and they still want to be friends with people. How do you advise people who are more withdrawn? Or maybe like a little bit, more Oscar the Grouchy, I suppose.
You know, you offer to help people with what's important to them. You care about what they care about. That's how I make friends. And I do that with other authors. I say, hey, I love your work. What can I help you with? You know, what are you looking to do? Right. How can I help you? And now I have a really strong author community. I've started author groups, two, of where we help each other with their things. These are agentic groups. So, you know, if someone stops being an author, we'd have to renegotiate. Well, why are we going to keep meeting every week?
Yeah.
But it really is, how do I help other people with what they care about? That is how you make friends.
Mm.
And it's really just seeing opportunities. It could see your neighbor with their lawn. Be like, oh, I notice you're putting more effort in. Like, can I help? Like, can you teach me about lawn care? Like, anything.
And then you become the lawn friend.
Then you become the lawn friend.
I love it.
You got to start somewhere.
Let's bring in another caller. We have Stephanie from Lancaster on the line. Stephanie, you're on Studio 2. What's your question or comment?
Yeah, I think my comment would really be, like, love the conversation today because I think it's so important just around connection and community. You know, it's one of our basic needs. But I think when we're talking about establishing friendships, relationships, I think a really big part is, well, there's two, I think, which is going to be vulnerability. So as we talk about, you know, joiners and kind of how do we put ourselves out there, I think first is really asking ourselves, you know, what is it that we do need and getting to that point where we're able to define it. In addition to how do we communicate that and being open to the possibility of it not happening and hopeful that it will happen, but being really clear on what our boundaries are, what our limits are, what our expectations are within the relationship so that we can set those guidelines down from the beginning. And then as we go through those life changes and transitions, being able to reevaluate those. And sometimes people are going to fall off because of transitions and changes, but if we can be open with ourselves and take that step, I think it can create really functional relationships.
Yeah. Okay. Stephanie, rolled it out. Okay. But you know what? I will say that I remember when we had you on the show before, Anna, I took one of my friendships to a deeper level because of you. And we
what?
Actually,
really?
Yes. The person who is now my best friend, we actually went to brunch and
I asked her like what she needed in a good friend, and we became that for each other. And I never had a conversation with a friend, and we talked about it, and it really took us up to the next level. And so I just wonder, like, how do you sort of, if you have a friend who you really like and you guys are friends, how do you make that a deeper friendship? Because I think sometimes you think this person's my best friend, but they don't feel like you're their best friend. And so how do you sort of get that deeper relationship that you want and open the door with somebody who you already have a relationship with?
You know, part of the struggle with modern friendships is uncertainty. And uncertainty creates anxiety. So my job as a friend is to get rid of uncertainty wherever possible, mm-hmm. and to tell my friends, you're one of my best friends. I love being your friend. You know, here's why I love being your friend. Here's, you know, what I want to do with, like, here's where I hope we can go together. I just told one of my newer friends, I'd love to travel with you. Like, are you open to traveling? Dang. How can we deepen our friendship
together?
That feels
like a big swing.
That's a step.
But it's about making
What if they said no?
No, she's like, that sounds great.
But what if she said, that's the point, is that, I know she said yes. What if she said no?
That's vulnerability. Yeah. Vulnerability. You know, but
that's part of the risk of friendship is part of its rejection.
Yeah. See, that's,
so
well, that's
true.
So
it's like being, how much can you tolerate rejection and how much can you tolerate uncertainty? Because so much of friendships are ambiguous. Yeah. So it's like, let's make it plain. I want to be your best friend and let's travel to Paris. What do you say? She's like, I'm in.
Let me ask a question for Natalie Pennington, bringing you back in the conversation. We're talking a lot about what we can do as individuals. Can society be more friend-friendly?
Uh-huh.
Can we design a more friend-focused society? I don't know. That's probably not government policy. Maybe it is. I don't know. But can we restructure our social order in some way so that this happens more naturally?
Oh, absolutely. There's actually a really great group based out of Canada that created public health social guidelines and said, here are things that individuals can do. Here are things government can do, communities. And so really trying to keep in mind, our walkability, having access to people. Where I'm at in Colorado doesn't really have the infrastructure for people to get access as we might have in Philly or in the Northeast. So definitely gets a little harder for people. So encouraging some of that. I also loved the person who was talking about creating systems online just to let people know what's even out there. Like, here are groups we can join, because that lack of structure and routine as adults for socializing is so hard for us to so really trying to create that. Okay, I will go to the book club. I will join this parks and recreation board.
Yes.
And those are the ways we really can connect more.
I read about Natalie, aggressive friendship, being the aggressive friend. And I was telling Avi before the show that we have a little group of couple friends that my husband and I hang out with. And one of the people in the group is the aggressive person who makes sure we all schedule it. Like, can you talk about, if you really want stuff done, somebody got to do it. So, you know, like being the aggressive, what's the argument for being the aggressive friend that sort of follows up and makes sure they nail down the dates and wrangles everybody?
Yeah, I'm doing a study right now about long lasting friendship groups, how people have been friends forever. And I was just interviewing a group on Tuesday and they said, we've stayed friends because one of them is the instigator.
Yes.
Right? They're the aggressive friend. If you don't have somebody who's saying, hey, let's make sure we do this get together, check your calendars. You know, sometimes we got to pester our friends to make sure things happen, but it benefits us and it benefits them, and we stay connected.
Yeah, I'm not the one. I'm not the aggressive friend, but well, I'm glad to have them.
Exactly. So we're the same. Neither of us are the aggressive friend, and we kind of do rely on these other people. Was that okay? And to sort of rely, or do we have to up our instigation and aggression?
I think it's okay as long as nobody feels bad about it.
Yeah.
If one person's naturally better at it, like,
yeah,
go cook.
Let them cook.
Let them cook. I'm just trying to sound Gen Z. Oh, yes, let them cook. But it really is if someone starts feeling a negative type of way of, you know, I'm always planning things. Nobody else cares as much. To that, I'd say, well, are the events as compelling as people would?
Yeah.
Is it equally compelling to all people? Because ideally, everyone would want to do it and get excited about it.
Natalie, as we're getting ready to wrap up, is there a limit to how many friends we can reasonably have? What does the research say on sort of like our capacity for friendship?
Anna mentioned him earlier, but Robin Dunbar's work says our upper cap is 150 people in our network.
Yeah.
It's not like I can close, right? We've got circles within, but 150-ish people is the number we tend to go with.
Yeah, past that, it's like, yeah, people are going to start falling off.
You don't even remember their name. Yeah, it's too many.
Yeah.
Yes.
Interesting. Okay, well, I want to thank both of you for being our friends this hour and teaching us so much.
High five.
Natalie Bennington is Assistant Professor of Communication Studies at Colorado State University and co-leader of the American Friendship Project. Natalie, thank you for your time today on Studio 2.
Thank you all so much for having me. It was a great conversation.
And Anna Goldfarb is author of Modern Friendship, How to Nurture Our Most Valued Connections, and also does the Substack, Friendship Explained. Thank you for explaining so much to us this hour.
Oh, my pleasure. I had a blast.
And now it is time to reveal our Studio 2 DJ of the Day song selection. Al, hit it.
If you're ever in a jam, here I am.
Right. That's the song Friendship in a Medley by Judy Garland and Ethel Merman. It's from a compilation album based on Judy's television show from 1963 and 1964.
Thank you to Joe H. for choosing that song and being our friend and our DJ of the day. And we cannot end this show.
No, we cannot.
Without talking about one of our friends.
Yes.
Who is leaving us for another job. But we are so sad to say goodbye and proud of this person, talking about our producer, Andreas Copes. Who has, speaking of that song, gotten us out of a lot of messes. A
lot of messes. And we're going to miss them so much. They've been here almost 3 years.
Yeah.
Since the show was
early days.
Early days. An infant. Only 6 weeks old.
Yeah.
And Andreas has been here. And so we want to wish you the best in your next endeavors.
And all the people who've talked to Andreas on the phones over the years, I know you're going to miss Andreas too. Thank you, Andreas, for everything. We also want to thank our other producers,
yes.
Debbie Builder, Hazel Mae Bryan, Mike Schiffler, our visual producer, Al Banks, and Tina Calique, who engineered today's show. Our executive producers, Kevin McCory, Joan Isabella is WHYY's audio general manager. And from Studio 2, I'm Avi Wolfman-Arendt.
And I'm Cherry Gregg. Friends, thank you so much for joining us.